Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
The thing about 2020 is that just when you think you've adjusted to a new reality, that new reality gets shifted again. If you are like me, you've probably spent the last several months adjusting to coronavirus life. And then, for the last several days, you've been glued to your TV and your phone, watching headlines about protests and unrest and pain all over this country. Some of you listening were in those protests yourself. If so, stay safe out there. All of a sudden, in just a few days, a different reality to adjust to. New and old questions raised about how we live our lives together day after day. This national moment hurts a lot. And we're going to talk about it all in detail later this week on the show. But for now, today's episode is all about the new reality that existed before those protests started, when the biggest story across the country and the world was just a global pandemic. Back then, just a few weeks ago, we were looking for bright spots, for a moment of relief. I interviewed Hassan Minhaj a few weeks ago, and he had so much calm in the middle of the happy but frazzled chaos of home life. I caught him actually in a very tight window of time.
You know what's so funny, Sam, is that like I really feel like I have to barrel through this. I already talk fast, but I feel like I have to barrel through this because I have a real life 2-year-old shot clock that's winding down. It's not a 24-second shot clock. It's just a nap shot clock.
That 2-year-old is his daughter. And while she naps, his wife is caring for their newborn son. This is a reality millions of parents are living through right now, trying to fit work into caring for children, all while under quarantine.
You know how, like, they say with Montessori, the kids get to pick the subjects?
Yeah.
With Corona, the kids also get to determine the scheduling of the day as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, we had to switch from zone defense to man-to-man now that we have two kids. And so I took the 2-year-old. And it's like, you know, for me, I the level of appreciation I have for schools and teachers, and I'm not even talking about good or bad teachers. I'm not even going to apply value here. I'm just talking about having a place to put your children. Like, that is a thing, is something I took for granted. I realized schools isn't a place for education. It's not a place to learn. I think just hundreds of millions of Americans need places to put these hyper energetic bodies.
These aliens.
Yeah. They just have so much energy and they do not stop. And you just need a confined place to put them.
From NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. Today, my conversation with Hassan Minhaj. He is a comedian and host of the Netflix show Patriot Act, which returned for its 6th season last month. Of course, the world has changed a lot since the last season ended in December.
This is Patriot Act Quarantine Edition. We are now months into the pandemic that has brought the world to its knees. We're all avoiding human contact. We all dress like highway bandits at Trader Joe's. And we have all spent hours FaceTiming the neck fat of our loved ones. By now,
like so many talk shows right now, coronavirus means there's no more studio audience and that Hassan films from a makeshift studio at home. I talked to him during Ramadan, so that gave him a chance to reflect on his faith and talk about what being Muslim means to him. But before we got into that, I caught up with Hassan about his new season and how he's thinking about the world differently right now. Talk our listeners through a day in the life of you working on your show stuff and having the kids, because when I read it, I was like, oh my God, this requires not going to call it military precision, but I guess just the patience of Job. Walk us through a day with a 2-year-old in work.
Right. Okay. So we have a 2-year-old and a newborn. And so the newborn is with my wife, and he's still, you know, it's basically the baby and the boob, and they have a very close relationship right now. I'm just kind of hanging out and helping in any which way that I can. But with my 2-year-old, she gets up around like 6:45 or 7. And so I'll get her going between 7 to like 9-ish. That means, you know, get her changed, get breakfast going for her, do some sort of like an activity with her, just like play with blocks or puzzles or read a little bit. And then around 9 o'clock, we have the first sort of senior staff check-in meeting. I'll pass her on to my wife while our son he's already eaten, and then he's napping. Then I'll do my first couple rounds of meetings. I'll come back around 11:30, 12, get her lunch, put her down, and then what you're catching right now is the 12 to 2:30, 3 p.m. nap time that she has, where I get to get a lot of work done so I can do what I'm doing right now, interviews, I can do writing. Then when she gets up, again, I'll like take her, we'll just do some sort of activity for a couple hours. And then around, you know, dinner time, we'll do the whole thing, dinner, shower, like bath, all that sort of stuff. I'll put her down and then I'll go into the second half of like my day, which is a lot more of the writing and the researching. And so that goes from like 7 to like midnight-ish.
Oh my God. And all of this is dependent on both of your kids keeping a pretty straightforward and reliable nap / sleep schedule.
Yeah.
Because if they get their naps off, it screws up the whole day.
Yeah. It's just like, look, a curveball could hit us at any time and you just kind of got to deal with it. And this is going to sound weird to say, but we're so lucky that the newborn isn't mobile. Like if he could somehow walk now, it would just be insanity.
Yeah. Let's talk about the show.
Yeah.
My biggest question for you with this show, with your kind of show that is topical and timely and of the week, does everything change post-pandemic? Does it change what you think about news, what's current, what matters?
Yeah.
The whole world feels different. How different will your show have to be?
Yeah. So for us, like the real thing that just kind of pulled into focus for me was, look, like so much of the show, even pre-COVID, and we still had a pretty wide aperture at the way we looked at the world and global news. But now post-COVID and the way that it affects all of us, my focus going into this with the writers and the researchers was, hey, we got to talk about things that are really affecting people's everyday lives, which is why our first episode out the gate was rent and evictions. And that sort of urgency just informed a lot of the way in which we're talking about stuff on the show, and especially this batch of episodes. So that put a lot of these stories that we had been tracking for a long time, it put them in the driver's seat in a very new and interesting way. And I just kind of want to attack them that way.
Yeah. Are there some things that have just fallen by the wayside, like things that you just don't care about anymore post-COVID? Like, I find myself totally reassessing how much I care about celebrity gossip. I used to like to follow it. It used to be interesting. And now I'm like, unless it's a celebrity being smart and helping somebody, I don't care about them anymore. Like, are there things for you where you're just like, I used to care about that, not anymore?
This is going to sound so weird. It made me look at, you can judge me, but this is the truth. It made me look at even stuff like, I'm a sneakerhead. I love sneakers. I've loved collecting them. It's this weird thing that I even look forward to. Like, oh man, these new Jordans are coming out. The Jordan 5, you know, the white and fire red Air Jordan 5s are coming out. And they dropped during COVID. And it made me think about something. It made me think like, wait, I have like 50 pairs of shoes. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Who am I going to show them off to? Like, I'm going to put these on and wear them in front of who? You know, like it put this sort of like the consumerism of something that brought me joy, but it put it in perspective. What actually really does matter?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot about food differently now. Like, I'm a foodie. I like to spend my disposable income going to bougie restaurants and trying new foods. Uh-huh. I'm into the rankings and the list and the reviews.
Okay.
And like, I still care about food a lot, but now I'm kind of like, that bougie stuff doesn't matter. Like, how are people eating? What is our food supply looking like? How can I cook for myself and cook for others that I love? Like, I still like food, but I got to think about it differently and less self-importantly than before. And I feel like you can still care about consumerism and things that you like and shoes, but like, how do you think about it differently?
Well, for me, the thing that I thought about, I had to just do some personal reflecting on, is just like, is now the time to buy things and try to flex Do you know what I mean? That this doesn't this does not feel like the time.
No space for flexing. No flex zone.
Look, I know. Look, in terms of the flexes you can do, you know, a $150 pair of shoes or whatever isn't the most egregious thing. But still, like, it made me think about, like, come on, dude, you have more than enough. And it, and I think it's something that we even talked about on the show, like the certain kind of dietary and consumption habits that we have as a country, like, is fast fashion going to be the same when we come out of this? You know, tens of millions of people have applied for unemployment and that number keeps going up. Like, I think the way in which we look at the world and the way we'll want to consume is going to be different. Or it could be the complete opposite. Totally. I don't know. But I feel in this moment right now, we are going to have to look at it in a different way.
All right, time for a break. When we come back, Hassan talks more about his family and also his faith. He says that he likes to keep an open mind.
I'm kind of like PlayStation 3. Like, you know how it's backwards compatible? I'll play the other games.
BRB.
This message comes from NPR sponsor StoryPoint Wines, maker of StoryPoint, a bold new wine brand with a rich, layered taste profile. Enjoy StoryPoint Wine while you connect with those you love, either at home or at a virtual happy hour. Raise a glass and share a story. StoryPoint believes that the stories we share can bring joy even in trying times. Visit StoryPointVineyards.com/minute to purchase. Shipping is included in your online order, so consider shipping a bottle to a friend, too.
Cell phone footage shows police killing unarmed Black people. Protesters take to the streets. Rinse and repeat for a decade. Why?
Everyone moves on.
A blunt reminder that we've been here before on Code Switch from NPR.
One of the things I really enjoy about your show and about who you are as just a human being is that you're one of the few celebrities in your work and in your life who's comfortable talking about faith and spirituality. And I'm really interested in how all creatives deal with that issue more post-COVID, because whether we admit it or not, as a country right now, per capita, we are praying and believing and hoping to some higher power more than we were before. We just are. I wonder if this moment of national crisis has done anything to your relationship with faith, what you talked about before. Like, are you a different kind of Muslim now? or a different kind of person with higher power now?
What's really interesting is that right now it's the month of Ramadan. So, you know, Muslims around the world were fasting. And this is like a holy month for us. And to me, the toughest thing about Ramadan to me, and I've had to mourn it a little bit, is so much of this is based around community. But, you know, community prayers aren't happening. Mosques aren't open right now. You know, during Ramadan at night, you go to the mosque and you do night prayers, or you have people over for iftar to break fast. And you literally, you know, break bread with neighbors and friends. And it's this month-long thing that is entirely built around community. And I didn't realize that so much of the kind of strength that I get from it comes from that communal aspect of actually touching and being around people.
Yeah.
My religious identity has never been about, you know, the dogma per se. And a lot of times I struggled with growing up. There seemed to be a very transactional relationship with a person and God. You know, if I pray this many times, if I do this many times, I will get X or Y, you know, and every, I think most of the Abrahamic faiths have this very strange, like Super Mario Brothers level up type of thing of like, if you collect this many coins, you get to this part of heaven. And if you do this on this night, you get to take the green tunnel into this part of this unique spiritual world. Like,
exactly.
That's never done.
And it's not just reward. Like, it's also guilt based as well. And so it's not just if you get all the coins, it's if you don't get the coins, you really screwed up and embarrassed God and your family.
Yeah. You're going to go down to where Bowser is. Yeah. Yeah. But Bowser like lives in a fiery pit. Yeah. That never did it for me. To me, it was, again, it was always about, when I think about it, it's always about like, oh, I'm doing iftar with my, you know, my nana and nani or my dada and dadi. And, you know, it's wearing kurta pajama and getting dressed up in a kurta for Eid and getting like dressed up with my wife. And oddly enough, like flexing on Eid, like that's a thing. Like you get dressed up and you wear cool clothes and like everybody takes photos and you take over the gram for a day. It's a thing. But there's these just moments, shaking hands, hugging, these things that are now gone, and it bums me out.
Yeah. Does that absence, you think, make your faith stronger or weaker?
So I'll speak for myself. It's made it tougher for me because being around friends, like in person, being around people in the community, you know, one of the places that I love in New York is the ICNYU, which is great. Like it's the mosque. It's like on the NYU campus. It's this great mix of all sorts of different types of people. And I think the New York Muslim community is really interesting in the sense that there's so many different mosques that speak to so many different communities. There's like, there's a Bengali mosque and there's like one that only the cab drivers go to. And then there's like a black mosque and there's all these different communities that all come together in different parts of the city. And depending where you are, you can just kind of pop in and plug into a completely different part of the Muslim world, which is so cool. That's gone. I don't have that. And so when I, you know, when you have these conversations with people that are in person, they might give you a gem or you might hear something in a khutbah or a sermon that's like, it gives you like energy or a new way to look at the world. That's so different than getting it from a YouTube video or even getting it from a Zoom call. And that is a thing that I miss.
Yeah. Oh, I don't imagine. You know, speaking of like faith and how we're just reconceptualizing it in the midst of this pandemic, I think a lot about the way that you responded very thoughtfully to the blowback over your episode on Saudi Arabia last year.
As Muslims, we have to pray towards Mecca. We make pilgrimage to Mecca. We access God through Saudi Arabia, a country that I feel does not represent our values. But Hassan, there are a lot of things people are conflicted about. Look at Amazon. Amazon's messed up. Yeah, I don't pray towards Seattle, okay? Saudi Arabia is only 2% of the entire Muslim population. But whenever Saudi does something wrong, Muslims around the world have to live with the consequences.
We did an episode on our show, Patriot Act, about the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And it was pulled from Netflix in Saudi Arabia. And it kind of became this big international discussion on global censorship and what you're allowed to say and not say.
One of the things that stuck with me was, you know, wondering why this was the one show that Saudi targeted as being anti-Muslim, and what is the thing that makes us say or makes others say, this makes you a good Muslim and this makes you a bad Muslim? And I think about that a lot because I know so many Muslims in my life where they live their life. They are secular. They are having sex outside of marriage. They're doing whatever they want to do.
Right.
But they'll never eat pork.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like,
yeah, that's
okay.
The rule. That's the one. That's the one. I don't know why. Like, yeah.
Right?
Be like, hey, is there pepperoni on that pizza? Yep. I don't know. I've never tried to look at spirituality. Anytime I've looked at it in a way or I've tried to work with it in a way where it feels very anytime it's felt limiting, I've had a natural inclination to kind of back away from it. And I've never sort of defined myself spiritually through, you know, an oppositional or opposites type framework. I'm my family, we're Indian American Muslim, right? I've never defined myself by saying, hey, I'm Indian. And by being Indian, that means I'm not Pakistani. Or I'm Muslim, that means I'm not Christian or I'm not Hindu. I've never defined myself that way. That's such a limiting way to look at the world.
Yeah.
So much of like my identity is informed by different cultures and different things that have shaped me in a unique way. Like just because I'm Muslim, that doesn't mean I can't do yoga, even though that's like a Hindu practice that comes from Hinduism. Like any of these things that have come from, you know, other cultures and religious practices or beliefs, like if it vibes with me, I'm with it, you know? I'm kind of like PlayStation 3. Like, you know how it's backwards compatible? I'll play the other games.
Yes. How long did it was that always your MO with this, or did you grow into that?
You know, my wife, she comes from a Hindu family, right?
Okay.
And I remember when we were in college and we were first, like, you know, talking to each other and we're having our little, like, Montague versus Capulet, like, should we do this? Can we do this? That sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things when you're in your 20s and you're like, are we going to do this? Are we not going to do this? Will this relationship go the distance or not? And I remember she said, will you not be with me because of something I can't control? I.e. like the family that I grew up in and all that sort of stuff. And she said, it'd be really sad if like this all ended because of something that like I had no control over. And I just remember us both kind of talking about that. And I'm like, yeah, that would be horrible. What a limiting way to look at the world, that like these arbitrary lines that were kind of drawn through, you know, history and all of these sort of things. I certainly hoped, and I hope our life shows this, that our love was able to transcend those things. And I don't mean that just in like a cheesy Bollywood way, but I mean that like in a real way, you know?
All right, time for one more break. When we come back, the more Hasan Minhaj thinks about faith and belief, and the more he learns about that stuff, the more questions he has. He'll explain. BRB.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election: guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
The day's top headlines, local stories from your community, your next podcast binge listen. You can have it all in one place, your pocket. Download the NPR app today.
With civil unrest, the pandemic, and the economic crisis, you want to know what's happening right when you wake up. And that's why there is Up First, the news you need in about 10 minutes from NPR News. Listen every day.
You know, thinking about what you were just saying, this idea of like the rules to follow, the levels to level up on, getting the points, Mario World style. I grew up like strict Pentecostal, and it was very much a rules-based system. I'm not going to list for you all the weird rules, but like we couldn't go to school dances or the movies. Uh-huh. Women couldn't cut their hair. I mean, a lot.
Right.
And I had this moment where I just realized towards adulthood, all the people telling me to follow all those rules, they weren't following all the rules themselves. And I wasn't mad at them for hiding that from me, but I did say to myself, okay, let me just leave a rules-based system because it was low-key a sham anyway.
Got it.
The rules are always impossible to adhere to, totally, right?
Yeah, totally.
It's always too many rules.
Sure. I mean, like, look, like, Islam definitely has a lot of rules. And look, depending on who you talk to, I have, you know, different degrees of Muslim friends. There's levels to this game. Like I got best friends that only eat halal meat, right? And then like I'm like, look, as long as it's not pork, I'm good. And I think if anything, if COVID's taught us anything, like the Hindus had it right all along. We all just got to be vegetarian. the biggest thing that I wish like more communities embraced and more people just embraced in general is just because somebody doesn't reflect your worldview or your interpretation of the faith back to you, that doesn't mean they're quote-unquote a bad Muslim or bad Christian or bad whatever. And I think a lot of times people find themselves in that position where if you don't reflect that thing back to them, they'll feel like you've let them down or you're doing something wrong. And again, that just feels limiting to me, you know?
Yeah. The only rule is kindness.
Yeah.
Can't be kind. It's not worth it.
It's so wild to me also, right? I grew up in a Muslim household. Yeah. It's Ramadan. It's the holy month. All these things. You're supposed to be on your best behavior. Not only are you supposed to fast, you know, you're supposed to abstain from food and drink and sex from sunrise to sunset. You're also not supposed to slander or backbite. All of these things, right? You're supposed to fast to cleanse your soul. But one of my best friends and one of the most ethical human beings, Prashant, who's the co-creator and showrunner of our show, he's an atheist, and he is one of the kindest human beings that I've ever met in my life. Like, he is more just and fair than any Muslim person I've ever met in my life. Like, how crazy is that? So these, like, strict rules to me, like, the older I got, I kind of threw them out the window because life is way more complicated than the dogma that's written on paper, you know?
Exactly. And, like, I don't have time or space to let rules and dogma keep me from joy.
Sure.
To keep me from a new experience or a new person that might open up my world even more, you know?
So
don't let rules get in the way.
So Sam, do you consider yourself a pure hedonist? Or are you like, no, I'll put some guards up?
I am a hedonist who still believes in Jesus Christ.
There we go. Okay. Okay.
Like, right. I never stopped believing in God, but I definitely just got to a point where like I was like, I'm not going to church anymore, and that's fine. perhaps I end up in a church again one day because, like, I miss black gospel music. That like, is just good.
Right, okay.
I used to play in the church band, so I miss that.
Okay.
But, yeah, I haven't been inside of a church in a while.
Do you miss just the feeling of going to a place and where there's a bunch of people just gathering? Do you miss that feeling?
Oh, yeah. I miss that. I miss, like, the folks that I grew up going to church with, like, they were my cousins. They were my family.
Yeah.
I called them my family,
yes.
Right? I also miss, like, the thing that happens in a lot of places of worship. You enter a trance-like state. Either the music takes you there or the prayer takes you there or the sermon takes you there, but you kind of get to this moment in the service where you've, like, gone to some higher plane.
Yeah.
And you just feel it.
So,
and I think a lot of folks find that at music festivals or in the bar when they're drunk enough.
Right.
But, like, getting that high in a church setting feels very healthy.
So what has replaced that now for you, Burning Man?
Netflix.
Netflix?
When Netflix hits right and you got the ice cream with you and it's like,
right.
And the blanket's really cozy, you've gone to a
higher
plane.
Sam, I get
plane.
It, man. We're all chasing
you've gone
that
to a
feeling.
Plane.
We're all chasing that feeling. I get it.
Right?
I completely get it.
We're all chasing it.
Yeah.
What is it for you now?
Man, I mean, I'm lucky. Like, I get to do what I love to do, but there are moments. Like, the other night, like, me and Prashant were up till, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, like, finessing the script. And there's a moment where you'll hit this creative flow where it almost feels like you're Neo and you can see the Matrix. Everything kind of locks in. And you forget about time and you're just really having a lot of fun. It's kind of like that moment when you feel the coffee hit in the morning. Like if you have that 9 a.m. coffee and then right around 9:17, you're like, oh yeah, here we go. Like my processor's running smoothly right now. It's that sort of creative flow where you're just having pure joy. It all makes sense. The writing process is an art. That's super fun. And then there's these moments outside of career stuff that that are just beautiful in terms of family. So like... I'll chase my daughter around and she's into hiding now. You know, she's like really into the idea. The perception of like space and being able to hide behind an object and then pop out. Like she understands that now. And so I was doing that with her like right before I put her to bed the other night and she just burst out laughing so hard. And, I kind of picked her up
and I
was holding her. Yeah. And like, and it was just like pure joy.
Oh.
It was pure, like, unadulterated joy. I forgot about show business. I forgot about, you know, what people thought about the show. I forgot about Twitter. I forgot about the pressure of hosting a show. I thought of.
Yeah.
Forgot about all those things. And it was this very primal human moment of just like, I just want to make you happy. And I just want to be here with you.
Yeah.
And this is the best feeling in the world. And
I got to get a kid. They sound fun.
Yeah, man. I mean, or if the Netflix and ice cream is working for you, man. If like Netflix and salted caramel is working for you, some Talenti and some Netflix, dude, it's a lot cheaper. I'll tell you that.
Like my biggest takeaway in this whole crazy moment when it comes to belief or other things, it's like either option is messy. Choosing to lean into belief is going to be messy. Choosing not to is going to be messy because life is messy.
Yeah.
And so like, don't expect any one thing to fix it all and to make everything pristine. It'll never be pristine.
That's cool. I think one thing that has definitely happened with me and, you know, the older I've gotten, this is like a frustration I was having. I was talking to my dad about this and I was like, Dad, like the more I learn about like the world and spirituality and faith and all that stuff, the more questions I have. And my dad said something that I was like, that's actually pretty profound. He was like, he said, don't worry about the number of questions. Just worry about, as you get older, which questions become more clear and solidified and focus on that.
Mm.
And I was thinking about that. What I mean by that is that like, there's a lot of sort of just like, you know, there's the small potato stuff where you can go deep into the rabbit hole of the Torah and the Talmud and the Quran and the Sunnah and all these things, these very like minute things. But what my dad was talking about was like, what are the big things that like have really sort of solidified? And it's okay if you go your entire life trying to figure those things out. And I think one of the big things that has been solidified for me, especially because of the pandemic and doing Ramadan during the pandemic too, is what actually matters? Like what actually matters in my day-to-day life? Like I have this job, I have this career, I do these things. Bina, my wife, she has this job and she has this career. What are we doing it for? Like, what is what actually matters. And I think those things have been, we're starting to see them a little bit clearer. And I think that's a good thing. And maybe as like I get older, I'll continue to try to figure those things out. But maybe if the questions become a little bit more solidified and I just spend the rest of my life working on those big questions, you know?
Yeah. Thanks again to Hasan Minhaj for talking with me. The new season of his Netflix show Patriot Act is streaming right now on the Netflix. This episode was produced by Andrea Gutierrez. It was edited by Jordana Hochman. Listeners, we're back Friday. Till then, stay safe, stay healthy. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
With more and more information coming at you all day, every day, it can be hard to know where to focus. The new Consider This newsletter from NPR can be that focus. Every weekday afternoon, we take one of the day's biggest stories and break it down in a simple, skimmable format so you can get a better grasp of one important topic and what it means for you in a couple of minutes. Sign up for free at npr.org/considerthisnewsletter.
On the Code Switch podcast, conversations about race and identity don't begin or end with the news cycle. That's because we know race and identity impact every person and influence every story. We're getting into all of it with new voices each week on the Code Switch podcast from NPR.
Here at Planet Money, we bring complex economic ideas down to earth. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain the way money shapes our lives. Inflation, recessions, the price of gas, we've got you. Listen now to the Planet Money podcast from NPR.